BlakeRadio.com.
It's time for the most knowledgeable and informative show based around the world of professional wrestling. Thought we weren't supposed to use that word anymore. OWW Radio, with your host, Mr. Personality, Alan Wojcik.
It's not my fault I happen to be charismatic.
Along with the loudmouth assassin, the Spud Guy.
I just act that way to get chicks, dumbass.
The resident Aussie, Mace.
I am not going to lie to these people just because it makes them feel good.
Guest starring Kevin Scott as Jamal.
What it is, my nizzles, I got jellyfish shits on.
What? It's time for OWW Radio, live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Online World of Wrestling Radio, powered by the Wild Talk Radio Network and UltimateSportsTalk.com. And in the last few weeks, we've been on Justin TV, so that's pretty cool. The numbers is 267-297-1397. If you have the Skype network, you can join us by adding Sir Rockin, that's two words. Coming up on our second hour, the co-author of the WWE Encyclopedia and has some gaming interest going on, Brian Shields will join us to talk about everything that went on this past Sunday and last night on Monday Night Raw. We'll possibly get into a brand new TNA World Heavyweight Championship situation, but we gotta talk first about, this is another great week that we have another guest courtesy of Crossfire Wrestling, which is holding an event called A New Beginning on Saturday, November the 5th. It is at the Tennessee State Fairgrounds Sports Arena. It is another wonderful benefit, $2 of every ticket, which is $10 for GA, $15 for VIP. $2 from every ticket sold goes directly to the wonderful Make-A-Wish Foundation. Last week, we had an ECW-type theme going because the one and only Stevie Richards joined us. However, tonight, we have a man who is making his Crossfire debut. And if you go to kayfabecommentaries.com, you can actually, if you're a big ECW fan like Spug is and Mace is, you can get a copy of Timeline, History of ECW, 1994, with our guest, the franchise, Shane Douglas, is here. Thanks for being here. It's a great time to have you on.
Good to be here, guys. I tell you, that was an impressive intro in the sense that you were able to get all that information in there. I was sort of following along to make sure I had it all straight. Impressive. Kudos. Golf clap.
He does that each and every week.
I'm good. As Kevin Smith, the film director, says, I'm good at pimping, man. You need me to pimp some stuff. Send it along. I'll pimp it out there.
How did that movie about that on? I think it was a movie about a guy. It was called Rain Man, right? I remember all that stuff.
Yeah, Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah. When that project with Sean just came around a while back, what made you say yes? Was it the idea that it's keeping the ECW thing alive, or had you heard from Sabu, who did 1997, and said, this is a good project, you should get involved?
No, I've been hearing from the fans. You know, I've been out on the road. I hadn't heard of Kayfabe before they contacted before that, but I've been hearing from the fans about this company, and I never heard the name, that there was a really cool company that was doing this really unique idea. Instead of just, hey, Shane, you know, why don't you like Ric Flair or whatever? They were doing this really in-depth and unique approach to something, and I heard bits and pieces of it from friends of mine and then from fans. And when they contacted me and I went out to do it, I thought, well, this is a really unique approach, something different. You know, that's hard to say in wrestling to come up with something unique, and the guys at KFA did that. It's really a cool concept. They also have the guest booker, and we just did another one where they, I forget what they call the series, but where they take
You shoot.
Questions. Yeah, the shoot. It's really cool. You know, I think it's a really unique concept. We're onto something there.
This event that's coming up on a what? Oh, you're talking to whoever's in your car.
I'm talking to my shifter. I'm driving home from work. I know you and I are in about the same geographic area, Shane. I'm in Cleveland, you know.
Okay.
And you are in the Pittsburgh area, and I don't have to, you know, really expose my distaste for that city.
Thank you, Cleveland, Ohio, man.
No, yes, all right, way, I will say this.
Outside Tampa, Florida, 74 degrees. Go right ahead.
I will say this. I am a Penguins fan and have been a Penguins fan since the days of Super Mario. So,
City of Champions. That's all I can say. We got it's funny. Hey, at least, when you grow up here in Pittsburgh, you know, it really is. I mean, football obviously is king here. And wrestling, whenever I was a kid growing up, I mean, the Penguins weren't so good when I was a kid growing up before they went to the black and gold. But it must be something in the colors. But growing up in Pittsburgh, besides the football, and then, of course, the Pirates had a couple good runs in the 70s, but literally Bruno Sammartino was the other half of that equation. And people that grew up here in Pittsburgh didn't even have to – he might not even like wrestling. But everybody in Pittsburgh knew who the living legend was, Bruno Sammartino. And me being a kid growing up here was no different.
Was the Bisco a part of that wrestling scene back then, too? Or was that later on when he got to – when they all did all that stuff where he was the mentor and the trainee and then the chair shot that shocked everybody?
Yeah, that was, that was prior to my meeting him, but he was, that's an example of a storyline that was so impeccably laid out and implemented that it caught the fans, even those of us that were semi-smart at the time. Just if I go scared to tell my 5-year-old son right now, hey, there's no Santa Claus, he'll think I'm trying to trick him somehow, because he wants to believe there's a Santa Claus, and gosh darn it, it's going to be Santa Claus. And the same thing with the fans of this business. You know, Marks to me always has like a negative connotation for some reason. But I like to always say the fans of our business, because they're the ones that support us. And you know, the fans of this business, they don't care if it's a, you know, how the lady gets cut in half. What they care about is they want to get their entertainment dollar satiated, and they want to be rewarded for spending that dollar on you, and they want to believe, you know. And you look at the 1,100 fans in ECW Arena when we did the Gary Wolf throwdown in the Halo. Those 1,100 fans, I'd be willing to bet that on that particular night, were if not the smartest marks on the planet, they were certainly up in the top 10. You know, they were pretty. They'd seen pretty much everything. My question then is, for the fans that know it's a shoot or know it's a work or whatever, then why did those fans that night riot? Because it was an impeccably done angle that had no weak links in it. And the fans thought one of three things. They either thought Gary put himself a little too close to the action, Shane Douglas got a little bit too into it, or Paul Heyman pushed the envelope a little bit too far. But they all bought it. And that's the bottom line of wrestling.
Well, speaking of impeccably done angles, you yourself are part of a huge part of the ECW history, especially with the renaming of the title. When WWE did the rise and fall of ECW, the documentary, did you feel the slightest bit, you know, kind of slighted, I guess, for not being interviewed?
No, to the exact contrary. What I saw is opportunity.
Weren't you under contract with TNA at that time when that DVD came out? Because you did the Jeremy Borash Forever Hardcore DVD that came out around that time, too.
Yeah, I think I was with TNA, but I didn't have a contract with TNA. I worked on a verbal with TNA the entire time that I was there.
Oh, wow.
But I thought the first thing that went through my head when I watched it was how stupid Vince McMahon was, that he didn't talk to Sabu or Shane Douglas or Terry Funk or, you know, some of the main pillars of ECW, and immediately saw opportunity. That, okay, well, there's your side of the story. Now let the main guys of ECW tell you the real story. And like Paul Harvey used to say, here's the rest of the story. And I knew it was going to be a great DVD, and all we had to do was just get it done. You know, and it really was just a fill-in-the-blanks type of a project. It wasn't difficult to do because we all lived it. And I just was amazed that McMahon would be so cheap that instead of reaching out and going it properly, he would do a compendium called Rise and Fall of ECW. Then you've got to talk to literally everybody that was a star there. And so when he didn't, I just thought, boy, what a cheapskate and what a great opportunity.
Yeah, the Kayfabe Commentaries DVD, as I mentioned, covers 1994, and everyone knows the two main things that Spug may have been going towards. One was the night the line was crossed, and then later on that year was your throwing of the NWA World title, which I'd loved having that conversation with you, and we did our first interview back in 03-04. When you look back now at it, does it still hold the same impact in your mind, those two things that you did, what was probably the first three-way dance that went a 60-minute Broadway, and then later on that year you said, okay, the whole thing with Carluzzo goes down, and it's totally laid out, and I know you hinted to Sean Oliver that there's a book in the works, and God, I would love to read that book. Which one in your mind, looking back now in 2011, are you more proud of, that 60-minute Broadway or the setup that eventually led to the launch of the Extreme?
Hard to say. I mean, neck and neck, but like different bookends, because, you know, the three-way dance, the night the line was crossed, was literally what put us on the map. I mean, you know, we had been running for a while, and, you know, the houses were getting a little bit better and doing decent business, and people were beginning to talk about us. But it seemed to me, for at least from my perspective, that after that night, after the night the line was crossed, and the three-way dance, and everybody forgets to mention this, a pretty damn good card, the rest of the card.
That was a solid
card. After that, you know, that after that night, it seemed like suddenly we weren't being looked at or talked about like a weekend company or an indie fed. We were being talked about like the next big thing, and the fans had great expectations. So, you know, obviously I haven't been given the opportunity part of that, but is an incredibly proud point for me. And the fact that I was the only guy, and I always rubbed some Terry's and Sabu's nose, but I was the only guy that went 60 minutes that night. But they, you know, we had a great match that night, and to be honest, at the end of that match, I had thought that we had failed. It didn't feel like, because it was such an odd match, it didn't set up or flow at any kind of match that I'd ever been in. So at the end of the match, I'm laying on the apron with Sherry, and I'm mad at myself that, you know, I thought I had some missed opportunities in the match and stuff. And then I heard Sherry saying, "Oh my God, look." And I turned my head off the apron and looked, and the fans were giving us an ovation. And honest to God, at that point, I thought they were just being nice. I thought they were to give us respect, you know. But I went back and watched it that week. I got the tape and brought it home and watched it and realized how pretty damn cool that match was. I mean, you know, Sabu is just on as could be. And Funk, you know, you can't say enough about him. I mean, just he breathes it. You know, he sweats it. He lives it. He is that legend. And, you know, that was what put us on the map. But the other thing that we did, you know, one gave us birth, and the other one gave us our Maserati to drive it. You know, it was that was the one that we were able to, from the night we threw that belt down. And I you know, was a bit hesitant because I didn't know that night, as we were doing it, or the week leading up to it, there were very few people that were aware. I believe only me, Paul Heyman, and Todd Gordon were the only people that were aware of the possibility, because Paul never said, "This is what you're doing." He knew better than that to hand it to me like that. He said, "We can do it this way, to either throw it down or not throw it down." And to Paul's credit, he gave me both scenarios. He said, "If you throw the belt down, this is the heat that's going to come with it, but this is the glory that might come from it. And if we don't throw the belt down, then, you know, we'd have to go through this thing with the NWA and, you know, try a different pathway." I didn't know that night until I was literally at the end of the match with Squirt what I was going to do with it. And so that's why the promo came up. There was no scripting to that promo. There was no pre-planning of any lines. It was simply to go out there and launch that company, you know, to take it to that next level. And the fact that that is the one that really set us on our way, I think, if I had to dead point pick one or the other, I'm proud of both. But the night that I threw the belt down was the one I feel the, you know, the most proud of.
Was there a backup plan at all if that had backfired and you guys had to go, "Okay, crap, now we really have to play nice with Carluzzo"? Or was it always, "No, screw Carluzzo, this is what's going on no matter what"?
I never heard, if Paul ever had one, I never heard it. But, you know, Paul was one of those guys, I mean, you know, the evil genius behind the curtain, that, you know, he, if it didn't work, he would have thrown some other gasoline or spices into the ingredients and spices into the mix to try to make it work. But you have to remember, the NWA at that point was a dead organization. They weren't going to be able to help take us to the next level. It would be a question of, would we be able to help the NWA get back over? And I think from that standpoint, that was the sheer genius of the idea, was because we really at that, even on that night, ECW Eastern Championship Wrestling was bigger than what was left of the NWA at that point.
When you franchise Shane Douglas joining us here on All I Will of Wrestling Radio. He is a part of Crossfire Entertainment's A New Beginning on November the 5th. I'm Alan Wojcik. That's the Spud guy who has a question. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, when you look at your, you know, the night that you threw the title down and the essentially meteoric rise of that company after that, because I can remember going to my dad's house on the weekends and Cat Television out of Canton, Channel 29 at 11 o'clock every Friday night was ECW.
Right.
And, nice. The meteoric rise of that company, does it still surprise you to this day that you went from, you know, this small little promotion in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania to the third largest wrestling promotion, and in some cases the second largest wrestling promotion in the world, essentially overnight?
It didn't feel like overnight. You know, we were the ones that were in there plugging away, weekend after weekend. And it was sudden. I had a perspective, at least some perspective on it, because I'd worked other places. I'd been around the business about 11 years at that point. And, you know, we knew that we were in for a good ride. But all along, almost to the point of ECW demise, at least to my point of leaving, we always believed that we had a very small, loyal, but small audience. It wasn't until that first video game came out from Acclaim Video that sold in excess of 200,000 copies or something, that we began to realize, I didn't think there was that many ECW fans on the planet. So when we saw those numbers, we began to realize that it was something a bit bigger than we had previously thought it was. But it's funny because, you know, being a historian, it's funny, the old adage, you know, those who don't learn history's lessons are doomed to repeat its mistakes. And if you look at the wrestling industry today, it is so incredibly exactly like the wrestling business back then, if not much worse, but in the same vein as back then. Stupid characters, carried by young guys incapable of stepping up to that next level, corny lines and interviews and promos. Just you can go on and look today, and you know, if I didn't preface it by talking about 92, 93, you'd think I was talking about 2010, 2011. That's the point that really always, like, is almost... It flummoxes me because I look at it comes like TNA, and they have so much incredible talent in that dressing room. Bobby Roode, James Storm, AJ Styles. I mean, you get on the amazing ring, you get on the list, Samoa Joe. This is a packed dressing room just like we had in ECW. The difference is we didn't have the luxury of thinking we could fail at any point along the way and we'd still be okay because of a $1 billion company behind us. The fact that we lived hand to mouth and show to show, we knew that we couldn't possibly allow ourselves to give the fans even one letdown because they may not come back. And that sense of urgency at the time, you know, it kept it from being as fun as it could have been, although we had a lot of fun there. We could have had more. But it also kept us professional on our toes. In its entire run, I believe ECW spent something in the neighborhood of like $8 to maybe $10 million through the entire run from start to finish. TNA has spent in excess of $100 million, some people are telling me in the office it's approaching $150 million. Ouch. And that is astounding to me when I hear those numbers, because when I was a kid growing up, coming up in the business, and I'm sure you guys heard this as well, that, you know, the old saying was, if you have talent and a network and $100 million, you can start a wrestling company. Well, Dixie Carter has disproven that theory, because I think the problem with it is anytime you have $100 million, you're going to have $100 billion strings attached to it. And ECW, on the other hand, we had one guy. He was the guy that created the ideas. He was the end all and be all as far as the decision making process went. He did have an incredibly talented crew of guys like Raven, Sabu, Taz, Tommy Dreamer, Mark LaMonaco, Terry Funk, of course, giving him all this input for their particular angles. But the bottom line is, we didn't spend anywhere near that money. And in the 7-8 years that ECW was in existence, we produced dozens and dozens of bankable stars. Today, I would argue, and by no fault of the talent, I'm going to stress that again, but TNA, because of terrible writing, indecisiveness, start and stopping, and this penchant that they have to keep going back to this 1982, 83, 84 generation, it's bizarre to me that, you know, we're back in the same place, that they're now spending today in excess of multiples of what they used to spend to get a lower rating. Now, I don't know how many businessmen you know, but the businessmen that I know look at me when I ask them this question like I'm crazy. Would you continue to do business spending 10, 20, 300, 400, 500 times as much money as you spent to get less profit than you did before? And, of course, we know the answer. It's rhetorical. Mm. 2 weeks ago, Dixie Carter had the opportunity to let Ric Flair, Eric Bischoff, and Hulk Hogan's contracts lapse and move to the next phase. And she resigned them. And I can't explain why. You know, the talent in that dressing room, the young talent, I look at a guy like Bobby Roode or Samoa Joe or AJ Styles. I'm so impressed by these guys and their talents. But, I'm sure you guys are aware of what happened with, you know, Hogan saying infamously now, Rude's not ready. Rude was ready 5 years ago. You know,
he was ready when you were working there as a part of the thing with the Naturals and when you were doing the new franchise with Michael Shannon, Tracy Brooks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what they do with him then, now, I love Eric Young. Nothing, this is not a slap at Eric Young, but when they broke Bobby off of Team Canada, as Steve Austin used to say, if Vince wants you over, he'll strap that rocket to your ass. Well, instead of strapping that rocket to Bobby's ass, they strapped their anchor to his leg and put him in the ring with a guy in a chicken outfit and got him beat. You know, had him do the job. That's not how you get somebody over, Dixie, or anybody, or Jeff, or anybody else that's down there listening, Russo, whoever. That's not how you get somebody over. And Bobby is more than capable of carrying that belt, as many people in the dressing room are. But as long as you have this fight between the Hulk Hogan's and the Ric Flair's and the Bischoff's with all the political power they wield, and this younger generation of incredibly talented wrestlers, we know how that one always works out.
Mm. I sent in a few questions to the YouTube thing. I don't know if they were asked, but I got emails on this as well, so I figured I would drop it in here. Radio at onlineworldofwrestling.com if you want to send stuff to our guests. You had brought up dumb gimmicks and dumb catchphrases, and there may be a few thousand people listening that may not remember your stint in WWE. Unfortunately, I do, because I was a fan of yours, and I was going, yes, Shane Douglas is here. What's with the guy in the robe? If you look back now, was it wrong place, wrong time for Dean Douglas? Was it the writing? What went wrong with that gimmick? And do you think you look back, could it work in this current WWE, if you've seen the product lately, the whole PG thing they've been going with?
I think the character could have worked. When I first sat down to talk with Vince about it, and Jim Ross and others and that were there, Terry Taylor was one of the ones that was in the office then, I wanted the character in black and gold, which I think is much more collegiate looking, you know, a more collegiate looking robe. But the character was supposed to be giving, what I was told anyway, was from Vince, that he was getting hot because everybody, all the guys, including Bret Hart, you know, the best was, is, never will be, even Bret Hart was doing very specific, very obvious, lackadaisical things in the ring. For instance, the only time that Bret Hart would grapevine the leg back then was when he was getting the pin, if he wasn't using a sharpshooter. Guys in the corner getting hit would have their hands on the top rope, resting. Those are the things that Bill Watts used to be waiting for us behind the curtain to knock us around a little bit when we were kids. Vince wanted to take a different tack. He wanted to have somebody, it was supposed to be seen as like a sort of a tongue-in-cheek, you know, sort of nudge with the elbow to the ribs, hey guys, you know, tighten the work up. And that's what Vince told me at the time. And I wanted to go in with a more collegiate look as the Dean, and wanted to use legit grades, A, B, C, D, F. And I was told that I could. And then when we got there and started doing the vignettes, there was this one Sunday I went out there and did like 6 or 7 or 8 vignettes in a row. It was an incredibly long and boring day because he wanted me to speak in a monotone voice with no inflection like the franchise did, no passion or energy or, you know, hype. He wanted it to be a very flat, long time. And he told me later that the reason he did that was he had a teacher when he was in eighth grade that talked like that, and it drove him crazy. So that was this idea for a great heel.
Okay.
And so when they came up time to start putting this character on film and recording this character, Vince started allowing his entertainment cartoonist wackery flow through in his brain and started saying, well, instead of A, B, C, D, and F, why not put this guy in I don't understand this guy's penchant and love for powder blue on heels, because Sonny and Spicoli before me, and then since then I've seen there's a kid up there now that's wearing the exact same outfit. they either had a big fire sale in those outfits at one time at Sears or someplace, and Vince bought them all up, or he's got some kind of a Freudian thing about that. But so when I saw the outfit, I was mortified. I said, I can't wear it to the ring. I mean, I'm supposed to be a legitimate character, you know, 7-time PhD intelligent character. That looks like a cartoon buffoon. And, well, Vince told me one of the things that finally, you know, convinced me to go ahead and sign was on my 6th or 7th trip up there, there was just something nagging me in the back of my brain that I didn't want to sign. And Vince finally said to me, look, if it'll make you feel any more comfortable, if there's ever anything that you're uncomfortable with, anything at all, I don't care if it's in the middle of the night, here's my home phone number, call me.
Wow.
He wrote his home phone number down with a piece of paper and handed it to me. So I thought, hey, that's a pretty cool gesture, you know, and that I think is the thing that, the linchpin that finally convinced me, okay, this guy's serious. And I went ahead and signed. And the outfit was the first thing I called him about. And when I called him at home, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening, and for my concerns and my reasons for my concerns, he thought of, he at least he pretended like he was thinking about it and listening. And he finally said, okay, well, I get all that. But I think I still like the baby blue on you. And that was it. So I could call him anytime I wanted and just be told to go to hell, I guess, you know, but I think the character could have worked. Now, all that said at the beginning up to now, I've had a lot of time to think about this, obviously. I really don't believe that he ever intended that character to work. I think that his idea at that time was he saw this company, you know, this island of misfit toys, guys that didn't fit anyplace else, you know, been in half insane booker to the place, getting a crap load of press and the fans buzzing about it. And because I was the mouthpiece for that company and its champion, that was also challenging their champion and WCW's champions to shoots that they obviously couldn't respond to. That was his way of getting that mouthpiece shut up. Get him up there and that cuts the head right off. Well, you know, obviously it was successful at that particular point, but not successful at stopping the ECW juggernaut and hasn't been. I think that's the same reason he started his version of the ECW. To keep people from chanting it, you know. I think Vince has bigger and more important things to focus on right now than ECW or anything else. I mean, you talk about dying on the vine, that company's like a stone in water.
Wow. Jersey Girl in our chat room wants to know, in ECW you had Francine, in WCW you had Tori Wilson, TNA you were involved with Tracy Brooks, and in XPW you had Lizzie Borden. Was there at any time you felt you were basically doing the same thing over and over again in each promotion?
No, I thought that the valet was an integral part to that character. The difference was in ECW, Francine was intimately figured into the angles when Paul had conceived them. The night that she turned on the pit bulls, the night that Gary Wolf got thrown down, all of those things, Francine was an integral part to. I tried to make all the others integral parts as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think Lizzie in XPW was the closest because, A, she's a great girl, sweetheart, and she's got cojones bigger than most men I know. And, she was up for anything, you know, including letting Dick Grimes super bomb her off the top rope, not to the ring, but through a table on the concrete floor. You know, she's a pretty tough girl. The others in the other companies, I really believed were, could have been every bit as big, if not bigger, than Francine was with me in ECW. But in those companies, even look at my runs in those companies, I couldn't get anywhere near the writing as to what Paul was giving me, you know, and that's all summed up in one night when, well, two nights, in WCW, whenever we went to the ring the night with Crowbar. And that was the night that I'm going to brain fart right now. I got Lizzie's head in my brain. My valet in WCW. See, this is what happens when you get with chairs for 30 years.
Torrey Wilson, maybe? Was it Torrey that was
Wilson,
there for a while?
There you go. Sorry, Torrey. I trust you. I know your name. You're a beautiful girl. I just... It's chair thoughts. Anyway, she... that was the night we started her. I gave her the line to start telling people, don't hate me because I'm so beautiful, you know, which was going to turn the heat for her. That was going to turn her into that bitch beautiful girl instead of that beautiful girl. And we were up in the stand, if you recall, and we did the thing where Crowbar attacked us, and then we dumped him off a 30-foot balcony down to the table. Incredible heat. The heat, you know, it's one thing I'm good at gauging is heat. And we had incredible heat in the building. We both walked down to the ring and we cut the promo. And they then summarily sent Goldberg out to spear me and do his finish to me. And so I went to the back afterwards and told Russo, you know, Vince, I'm because he'd asked me before, this was after he'd been fired the first time I was brought back. He called me up the night that he got called back and said, I was out of an XPW, and he said, can I ask you a favor? Would you please help me? I know stories and everything, but I don't know wrestling. If I ever have a question, can I come to you and ask? I said, absolutely. So I knew that the night that I was given that backstage was a terrible idea. You know, they could have played with that for one. The one thing Goldberg needed was a foil to play off of. He'd been through the rest of the company like hot knife through butter, and that was going to be a pretty limited run unless somebody could match wits with him. Not muscle or brawn, but wits. And so I went, but I knew that if I said that beforehand, others in the dressing room and in the booking committee would go to Russo and go to the company and say, see, Shane Douglas ain't a team player. So I went ahead and did it as written so that I could then go back to Vince afterwards and say, now let me explain to you why that was a terrible idea. And I did. I went out and executed it, went back. And then I told Vince, I said, so how else could we have gotten out of it? I said, when he comes and goes to spear me, I grab that top rope and fly out of there like somebody's ready to execute me. And for week after week after week, have Goldberg chase me. Just when the fans think he's not going to get me after a month, two, three, or four, whatever, I turn like I'm going to take the powder and step right into the spear. And I said, now you have an angle built, created. Here's this big mouth who's been running, getting sliding away, and suddenly he's on his back dead. Now we have an angle. And he asked me why I didn't come out beforehand. I said, because if I did, there have been 30 people come and knock on your door down afterwards telling you that I wasn't a team player. And so they didn't really have an idea. So Torrey could have been great to fill that role. You know, certainly athletic enough and certainly smart enough and certainly beautiful enough. But the franchise character never got any tread. You know, every television I'd get to in WCW, I'd look at the board and go, why do they have me doing this? You know, just none of it made any sense.
Sounds like that's the way for a lot of people in the NWCW.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, that's the history of WCW, you know, mismanaging, I mean, how many, you know, I think it was like, what, 746 incarnations of the NWO. It was red, white, purple, chartreuse, plaid. I mean, they had like, you know, so many versions of that thing. You talk about killing an idea, a good idea. But, you know, and sadly though, it's that same type of bad move after bad move that I'm saying with TNA today and have seen since I went there, you know, several years ago.
You know, I ask this question of everybody who comes on, and I know you have a good story.
Uh-oh.
What is the...
he may be saving it for the book, however, so...
What is the best rib that you have ever seen?
Ever seen?
Ever pulled? Whether you pulled it, had somebody pull it on you, or watched somebody pull it. I don't care.
Well, I thought you were like having me like try to like incriminate myself, and I, you know, a professional never does that. I myself never pulled ribs on anybody. Right. Wink, wink. But the best rib I ever saw was we were on a plane in first class, flying, I forget where. The whole first class cabin was filled up with Big Boss Man was up there, Davey Boy Smith, the Road Warriors, me, Mr. Perfect, Rick Rude, I believe, and one other guy. All these wrestlers and this other one guy, and of all people, he's sitting right next to Kurt Hennig, who is world renowned for being one of the hardest, stiffest rippers in the business. And, the guy won't stop talking. Just keeps talking Kurt's ear off. Well, those flights are one of the few times that we wrestlers can get any kind of real sleep, you know. And so he kept trying to get to sleep, and the guy kept waking him up, and I thought, boy, this guy's going to end up with no eyebrows or something, you know. And the guy kept going on, and Kurt even, like, tried to tell him, you know, I'm really deep, you know, I'll talk to you later, buddy. And he tries to go back to sleep, and the guy wakes him up again. So I've got a drink, you know, and they have the glasses up in the first class. So the guy's drinking his drink, and he gets up and goes to the bathroom. And, you know, Kurt, this is one great river he was, because he didn't stop and turn around to all of us and go, hey, guys, watch this. It wasn't like that at all. He just stuck his hand down his pants, and digging around, and he pulls his finger out, and it's all covered with feces. I don't know if I can say the other words on the station right now. But he's
feces
got,
is good,
you know,
enough.
some of yesterday's dinner on the tip of his finger. And reaches over and rubs it around the rim of the guy's glass. And then closes his eyes and goes right back to sleep. So the guy comes back and no sooner sits down and wakes Kurt up again. You know, hey, can I ask you one more thing? And this is going on. This whole thing takes like 30 minutes to transpire. And the guy picks the glass up and he goes to take a drink and he gets it about 2 inches from his lips. And we're all going, he's going to drink it. And gets about 2 inches from his lips and puts it back down. Does that 3 or 4 or 5 times. And I'm thinking, he's got to have smelled it. He's not going to put that to his mouth. And just when we all thought he wasn't going to, he takes a great big long drink of it. He licks his lips and he winces his face and he looks at the stewardess and raises his hand. He goes, stewardess, can you bring me clean glass? This one tastes like shit. And Kurt is sitting right next to him, apparently asleep, and his shoulders are bouncing up and down. You know, that was Kurt Hennig. Great. I miss Kurt. Kurt was a great guy. But that was... That was a pretty good one. And there's been some good ones over the years in the business, but that was one of the ones that always stuck out in my mind.
go ahead.
I have one more. You've bogarted this all night, sir. I have one more. I know we're up against it. We got to get him out of here. But I just started training about 3 months ago.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you had any advice you could offer me.
Yeah, get out of the business. No, I'm teasing you. No, it really is. If I were a kid today, I would really, knowing what I know now, I would really second guess if I would go do this business again. And I don't mean that to sound, you know, I'm so thankful for my career. I'm thankful for the fans. I've had a blast over the last 30 years. But I don't know of any other industry where you can make the kind of money you can in this business and see the parts of the world that we've all seen. I mean, this really is a fairy tale lifestyle in most ways. I don't know of any other industry similar that the fathers are across the board obsessively against their children getting into this business. I think that speaks a lot about our business. And it's not the wrestling business. It's the way that people run the business that takes the fun out of it. And that would be the first thing put in the back of your head. But the other thing is to make sure, you know, whatever else you have, you know, I'm one of those guys that always believes in having as many pokers in the fire as possible, as many pots on the stove, because if you rely on wrestling, you'll always be disappointed. It seems like when you're not relying on wrestling, it's when wrestling is at its best for you. And so always have something else ready to go, you know, because wrestling can be, whether it's by injury or by politics or by politics and injury or by whatever, you know, this business can turn sour very rapidly. You know, so I would just, you know, that would be the biggest piece of advice I'd give you. Have something else to fall back on and be very careful in any place you trust in.
Well, I'm going on, I'll be 30 in April and I'm a 3-year foreman at a landscape company. So I'm pretty good at the falling back on something.
Yeah, well, perfect. And that's not a bad thing. You know, maybe go along with that, get some education to get yourself like up into a management position or, you know, an MBA to make yourself more attractive to the company. I'm a firm believer in education, you know, being a teacher and stuff. I'm just a firm believer in that, you know, once you get it, it can't ever be taken away. And it seems to me that right now, especially with where the business sits, I mean, you look at the, and it's a misnomer, the big two, because the big two ain't too big anymore. But when you look at those two companies and see the incredible lack of business that they are doing and the really poor ratings that they're putting out for the money they're spending, it's a question as to whether or not the business is going to go the way of roller derby. Now, I personally think that with companies like Big Time Wrestling and Crossfire, there are a couple independent wrestling federations out there that seem to get it, that have the formula, have the talent, have the fan base, And that's why I'm excited. You know, when Marcus Pastorius called me, and I've known Marcus since he was a kid, you know, and taught him a lot about the business as he was coming up through the ranks. And he's always impressed me as being a very bright guy, very loyal, hardworking. And when he was at TNA, I thought, well, this is going to be a big win for TNA. And typically, they let him go because of some kind of rumor or something that somebody started. Just, you know, typical trash. But again, you know, one negative thing can be turned into something else positive. And Marcus has taken what he's learned about the business, both before and then with TNA, working in the office there, and decided that it's time to start his own place, start another company. And if, again, if you look at the parallels of the business, then 92 to the rise of ECW, the fans clearly were looking for something different then. If they were loving what they were getting from Vince and WCW back then, there would have been no room for an ECW, and yet we became a pretty hot company. From what I see in the fan base, we're right in the exact same place then, if not much, much worse. The business is in a really bad place, but the wrestling fans are still there. And I go to the Comic-Con conventions, the Legend Fest, and all these different indie shows around the country. The fans are hanging on by their fingertips, waiting, hoping, begging, starving for new wrestling to come home, something different. And these companies can seem to give it. And I think the best way to do it, the only way to do it, is there's a couple parts of the formula, a couple ingredients you're going to need to make that bread rise the right way. First of all, you've got to put some of the old school wrestling back in. The storylines have to be intelligent. They have to challenge the fans. You can't talk down to the fans and give them some stupid, you know, I stole his dog, but that's why he hates me. No, come on, you got to work a little harder than that. And the fans will work hard. If they can't get it at first, they'll work hard to think up to it, to build themselves up to it. Wrestling should challenge them intellectually on the storyline premises. Then it should also, with the advent of shoot fighting, we have got to have a heaping, helping dose of realism back into wrestling. This stomping your foot and missing by 6 inches is what's partially to blame for the wrestling dying. In ECW, if you go back and look at those tapes, you'll see we were knocking each other around pretty damn good. And yet, you know, we're all still here today. You know, may not be able to remember some beautiful women's names along the line, some, you know, 10 years down the road, but, you know, we're all still here today for the most part. And, you know, we're looking at a business that's in a really bad place. I think those two things said, the last ingredient is fan loyalty. And I don't mean fan loyalty to the company. I mean the company's loyalty back to the fan. I heard a story about TNA from Delaware this past summer where they had a fan fest at a fair, and they sold $50 tickets and told the fans, you know, buy the $50 tickets, meet the stars of TNA, and bring your memorabilia and get it signed. So they sold about 150 tickets. And when the people got there, they were led into a room to meet the underneath guys of TNA. And they were told in that room that if they wanted stuff signed, they had to buy TNA merchandise to do it.
Ouch.
And if they wanted to meet the stars of TNA, they had to buy a $150 guitar for Jeff Jarrett to sign. And then they'd take him into another room to meet the real stars of TNA. Now, you talk about the stick of the middle finger right in your fans' eyes. You know, that's about as unfan-friendly as you could possibly be. Those three ingredients, loyalty to your fans, and they'll be loyalty to the cows come home. And I told Dixie that the very first day I met her. Realism and good old school storyline, forcing the fans to think about it. You know, not just, oh, okay, I get it. And the first, nobody wants to walk into the movie, spend $15 for a ticket, $15 for a popcorn, and $6.50 for a Coke, and then sit down and in the first 3 minutes go, ah, the butler did it. You want to be swerved. You want to be taken on a ride and entertained for that 2 hours. And those are the things that, you know, wrestling. That's why when Marcus called me for Crossfire in this show, I thought, well, you know, I know the comedy's gone on. I mean, you know, from Kid Cash to, the Cajun Brings Rock and Roll Expression and, you know, the loaded card coming in for this match. And I thought, you know, with that kind of a dressing room, I can certainly help out with how to steer that dressing room and take it to the next level. And that's his big penchant on this thing, is he feels that he's had it pushing in the right direction well enough now. He's certainly not comfortable with where the company sits. Him personally, he wants to see this thing get to the next level and be able to give the guys and the fans and the industry a kick in the butt, you know, and take the business up to a point where we can hopefully get these guys more gainfully employed. And I think if that happens, if anybody's going to benefit from it, other than Marcus and Crossfire and our fans and our wrestlers, it's going to be Vince and Dixie. Because it seems to be that when the business is down, their industry hurts worse than anybody's, their companies. So when Marcus told me his idea, like I said, I've known him since he's a kid, and one thing I know about Marcus is that he's not going to, like so many people in wrestling, tell me what I want to hear and then try to, you know, that night give me some other version of it. You know, Marcus is a pretty straightforward guy. And, you know, he's been telling me, I talked to Marcus, you know, several times a month and have for the last 2 or 3 or 4 years. And he's been telling me along the way, hey, you know, I had this many people, you know, 700 people, then he told me he had 1,000 people, then at one point 1,700 on the fairgrounds. Nashville is an incredible city for, there's certain places around the country that have just a built-in lineage to wrestling, and Nashville is one of those places. And, you know, if you give those fans there, those three ingredients I mentioned earlier, the fairgrounds building that they're running in right now won't even be close to being big enough. And then on top of it, the ticket prices, which are more than fair in this economic climate. And mm-hmm. then on top of all that, the fact that he's still giving $2 away to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, to me is like all the pieces of the recipe are there. It's just a question of do they have it cooked and stir it in the right direction and know exactly where to set the oven. And so that's what we're trying to do. That's why I'm coming on board, and hopefully we can take it next. I'd love to be 10 years from now talking about, you know, not just ECW and my history there, but also Crossfire and what we do and how we change the business there. So I think it's definitely possible, and it's high time for another company to come along.
Yeah, and we're very happy that something like this has come along. As Shane just mentioned, it is $10 for GA, $15 for VIP. The VIP gets you into a 5:30 to 6:30 meet and greet with everybody that's on this show. That includes the franchise.
Yeah, and we'll sign their stuff, and I promise they won't have to buy a $150 guitar.
Well, they have to. Well, they will have to probably knock on Paul Heyman's door and say, "Can I have some of his $114,000?" Is that what you said it on the Kayfabe commentaries DVD? Is that the right total? $114,000 and change.
$144,000 some odd change. $144,000 and over $77,000 of that was money I had spent out of my pocket. You know, it wasn't money I was owed; it was money I'd spent out of my pocket. So, in a way, you could sort of add another $77,000 on top of that because I started off $77,000 in the hole and ended up $144,000. Oh, wow. So, it's he's got a good memory. I'd like to have him on the Alex Trebek show, Jeopardy. You know, I think he can do things, Alan. He can go places with that show.
I hope so. As mentioned, it is the Tennessee State Fairgrounds on November the 5th. Definitely get there because you don't know what the franchise is capable of if you have never, ever been to see him live in an event. Stay with us as we go to break. Coming up after it, we will get into the WWE with Brian Shields, co-author of the WWE Encyclopedia on Online World of Wrestling Radio.
Wednesday nights, the Wild Talk Radio Network brings you Otaku Talk Live.
I got a 15 on the IntelliControl.
Okay, what are you doing with it?
Trying to find a slinky.
Okay, you find a slinky, but it's one of those cheap new plastic ones.
This fine. Go to the top of the stairs.
I yell, watch out for paint cans.
Duck.
Okay, since he is smart enough to say duck, he dodges the duck that swings down from the top.
Duck and dodge paint cans, ducks, and any other flying object.
Okay, you also ducked the free pussy that flew by, but that's okay. You're now at the top of the staircase, with a slinky in hand.
Put the slinky on the top stairs and tip it over.
I get our following to, Shaniqua's following to, members, and we all start going, go, 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 go!
Alright, hang on a second. The slinky stops halfway down.
Oh!
God, I hate when that happens.
You know what? At this point, I'm gonna roll for the steal and the win.
Wait, what?
LEB Rules, Chapter 7, Subsection 15.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, you're right. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, roll a d20.
I hope Bob Barker doesn't own this castle.
For more geekiness, tune into Otaku Talk Live 9 p.m. Eastern on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
The following is the resume of Tim Stein, the inventor of the light bulb, the creator of the internet, a professional grass waterer, and of course, the real voice of wrestling radio. While only some of these things are true, what really is true is that Wild Talk Radio Network is part of the social media revolution.
Holy crap, dude!
And you can be too. How do you ask? It's simple. All you have to do is like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network.
Are you guys doing that stupid Facebook stuff again?
And by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/Wild Talk Radio.
Kick ass, dude!
This is the way you can stay up to date on all things Wild Talk Radio. Do it today, or Tim Stein will chase you off your lawn.
Once upon a time, a radio show began with a couple of guys talking about, well, let's just say, not-so-classy women.
I got a MySpace message. Now, you know that kid that was always here and he put the cigarettes out on his nipples and shit?
Fire nips.
Yeah, fire nips. Well, you remember the girl who showed off her tits to everybody?
Titty flash.
Yeah. Well, they're on break right now. Well, my ex is now, or was, living with, you know, titty flash.
It's fire nips and fire tits, because they don't want to set her.
Yeah, that's true. So it's fire nips and fire tits. Yes,
wait,
we did.
Didn't we set his dick on fire?
Yep.
Fire crotch and
fire tits.
Fucking tits. All right.
Yeah.
So fire dick and fire tits were right on a break.
They're on a break. And then, now, see, my ex was living with fire tits. Well, my ex and fire dick had sex at fire tits place last night while she wasn't there.
Almost 200 episodes later, well, this show has what makes you go, holy you-know-what.
You know, it sucks. I want to throw up, but I don't think I can.
What?
Finger down your throat.
Oh, man, this is like old times. This is what I needed.
So how many shots do you think you have out now, Ace? About 8 or 9? Oh, here comes the
Keep in mind, well, this is all for you.
This old jabber almost fell down his steps, so...
Only the landing. I got down all the steps you see, but the landing is because it has that turn.
This is how we party on CB Radio.
Join us for the 200th episode of CB Radio, otherwise known as Cigarette Butts and Bandanas, live November 5th, only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
This is Jessica Havoc, and you're listening to Online Wrestling... Shit, I'm sorry. What is it? It's Online World of Wrestling Radio. All right. This is Jessica Havoc, and you're watching Online World of Wrestling Radio, and if you don't listen, I'm... Shit. All right, let me try this. This is going to be it, you guys. You ready? This is Jessica Havoc, and you're listening to Online World Wrestling... Shit. Okay, I'm just going to try and slow it down for a second. Okay. This is Jessica Havoc, and you're listening to Online World of Wrestling Radio... And if you don't listen to this, then you're a loser, and I'm going to kick you in the face.
yo my ass. I'm sorry, that's all I ever think when I hear that. I remember Jeff Jarrett coming out when Scott Hall did a promo and he just said, hey yo my ass. Thanks to the franchise Shane Douglas for being here with us. He will probably be back in January. We may have him on. We know he's a big football fan, so we may have him on, talk some playoffs and whatnot when we get there. So yeah, that's a lot of fun. If you had a chance to visit the history of WWE recently.com, you know that I'm a part of a monthly podcast on that site called Triple Talk Wrestling Radio with Jackie Fives and Teddy Prentice. And this past Thursday it aired, and then it was on for the pay-per-view. And the amazing co-author of the WWE Encyclopedia and now has a new endeavor that we'll let him talk about in a couple minutes here. Brian Shields is here with us, and he mentioned off the air, Shane brought up the Acclaim game, for the ECW game, and then Brian's typing to me, and he's going, by the way, I worked on that. What was your involvement in that?
Hey guys, how are you? Great to be back. Yeah, it was funny. I was listening to that great interview you guys did with the franchise, and, my first years at Acclaim were as a marketing intern and entry-level coordinator, just as they were ending their run making the WWE games Warzone and Attitude. And yeah, we got the ECW license. That first video game was called Hardcore Revolution, and it was on the PlayStation 1, the Sega Dreamcast, and the Nintendo 64.
Oh, wow.
And it was actually funny. One of the video game cover concepts, one of the early ones that we did, was where basically like Shane Douglas was the focal point of the packaging. And we had, this was a precursor to the Legends of Wrestling, video game series that I created, where we had Hardcore Legends, in Hardcore Revolution, like the original Sheik. So, I mean, that, working with ECW at that time was awesome. I mean, the crew, everybody from the sound and camera people to Paul Heyman to the stars themselves were just awesome to work with.
And he doesn't owe you any money, which is good.
No, he doesn't owe me anything, which is good. And really, I have to say, I mean, being able to speak with him directly and work with him directly at that time, was a huge thrill. I mean, you know, like anything else, I mean, you know, doing the sports marketing, working with, you know, Major League Baseball and the NBA and some of the other leagues. I mean, you don't tell people while you're doing this work with them, like, oh, I was a huge fan, you know, or I'm a huge fan. But I mean, it was pretty cool, you know, being in some of those meetings and, you know, going to that, I don't know if you guys remember that December 1999 show that ECW had at the, the Westchester County Center, where they had that great Mike Awesome Masato Tanaka match.
That sounds like Spug and Mace territory more than me, because in 99 I was watching WCW WWF, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, but it was just like for me at that time, I mean, that morning we shot the commercial, for the video game, and, you know, and I'm sitting there and we're doing the lighting and, you know, Rob Van Dam's coming down and Paul Heyman was there, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, I remember watching this guy on AWA on ESPN, you know, managing the Midnight Express, you know, and now he's part of this video game. And, we were very disappointed. There were a lot of ECW fans at Acclaim. We were very disappointed when we were told that Shane Douglas had to be removed from the game. I mean, I got to tell you guys real quick, because I know we got to talk about what's current. But
oh, go right ahead. You're fine. I mean, we're good for time.
You know, just to let you guys know, I mean, that original ECW game was supposed to have the Dudley Boys, was supposed to have Sid, was supposed to have Bam Bam Bigelow, was supposed to have the franchise Shane Douglas. I mean, the roster in that game, the game that came out, the roster was excellent. I mean, but to have those guys in there as main playable characters from the get-go, just would have been awesome.
You're actually involved. I didn't know this until this past Wednesday, because most of the time that you and I talk on social networking, we're talking about other stuff, but you've recently got involved with a very interesting project that involves WWE and gaming. Tell everybody about this.
Yeah, absolutely. The WWE, which has been just, you know, having video games come out on their license now for about almost 25 years, they now have a video game accessory licensee. So when I say video game accessories, guys, I mean like wireless controllers, carry cases for your Nintendo DS. We have an Undertaker charging station for the Nintendo Wii. So this company is called Game On. They could be found and followed on Twitter at GameOn_games. And we just have a great array of products right now. We worked exclusively with THQ, who makes WWE 12. And we have coming out a Randy Orton wireless PS3 controller that actually uses the packaging art from the video game on the controller.
Oh, wow.
There's going to be stuff coming out, guys, with The Rock. There's going to be some special stuff with CM Punk. We had a John Cena Randy Orton controller that sold out on WWE.com. It was number 4 on their top 10 of all products being sold on the site. There's a lot of great stuff from Game On coming out between now and the end of the year, and we've already gotten stuff approved to come out in the beginning of 2012. So there's going to be a lot of great stuff, and the website is almost done getting updated at GameOnGames.net.
Have you seen physically this game that is coming, that Orton's in the cover? And if you live in Mexico, we found out Sin Cara's on the cover. Have you seen it yet? And if so, what do you think of it compared to previous generations they've created?
I have seen it. I do not live in Mexico. I just wanted to clear that up because you asked the question. I have to tell you guys, I'm a lifelong gamer. The wrestling category is one of my all-time favorites. So I love the THQ offerings every year. WWE 12 is really, it's just fantastic. I mean, they've done a whole different kind of gaming experience from their previous SmackDown vs. Raw series. I mean, if you look at the gameplay videos online, you look at how the characters look, I mean, it just looks fantastic. And they're actually going to be having a launch event here in New York City, and I can't wait to be there. Game On is going to be there. We're going to be giving away some of our Randy Orton controllers there to fans.
Where's this going to be at?
You know what? That I need to double check with them on. I know they were finalizing the details. Well, because, you know, guys, THQ is they're sponsoring Survivor Series.
Oh.
So, and actually, you know, before I go any further, I need to give a shout out to the team at THQ for WWE 12 and the brand manager there, Mr. Bryce Yang, who is just awesome to work with and a huge, huge knowledgeable wrestling fan himself. I mean, I got to tell you guys, WWE 12, you want to check it out.
That sounds like pretty cool. One of the people in our chat room wanted to know, no love for the 360. I'm guessing he's talking about the Xbox. Is this just a Wii thing, or is this for all gaming platforms, this stuff that Game On has created?
The Game On pieces right now are for PS3, Nintendo Wii, and the 3DS, DS, DSi systems.
Ooh, okay.
We had some stuff a couple of years ago for the 360. They were like the gel skins that people would put on, the face plates that people would put on their controllers. If you go on the site, www.gameongames.net, there still might be some stuff up there, but right now for controllers, we don't have anything for Xbox, but stay tuned. Maybe that'll change the beginning of next year.
Mm. He is Brian Shields. He can be followed at MightyPen_Sword on Twitter. Yes, we're all about social networking. I don't know if he's trending right now, because it seemed last night that's all they were doing. It's like, we don't care about what's going on in the ring, because this is trending! Something that was trending, unfortunately, last Wednesday was the E60 program on the ESPN network, and then you can see it online as well. And that is the real life wrestler they portrayed it as, with Scott Hall. As someone, you're a lifelong fan, New Yorker like myself, who got to see tons of great stuff go on. Did this just make you want to like run and find the nearest shower after it and stay in there for an hour? What was your initial feelings when this piece ended?
I just thought it was very sad. You know, I think if you're a fan of wrestling or you follow the industry in any way, the content that they showed was not new news. I mean, some of the details I think were new for a lot of people, you know, incorporating his son into the story, and, you know, the detail of, you know, how many prescriptions he takes a day and things like that. But, you know, I'm a little torn on ESPN. You know, I stopped watching them. I grew up loving ESPN. I grew up watching Scott Hall on AWA, on ESPN weekdays at 4, but, you know, they are usually, they don't do wrestling any favors. It's very funny to me. They don't do wrestling any favors, but they never have a problem stealing the WWE's production style, and they have no problem hiring their announcers.
Yeah, Coachman, and now I believe Todd Grisham's going to be showing up soon, or he may have already.
Yeah, and the other thing also is that, and some of the people there I think are really talented, but you know, like even like what the guy said as a lead in into the story, like how the 90s were about like sex, drugs and rock and roll and wrestling. I mean, that's what people were describing about about wrestling in the 80s.
And they were describing that about ESPN at that time too. If you go and check out the book that was recently written on ESPN.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just thought initially that it was very sad, and I don't know Scott Hall. I never worked with him. I don't think any of that matters. I think just as a human being, I just hope that he gets okay. He gets the help that he needs and can recover from this terrible illness.
And if people that were watching that program and going, that Shauna Sale guy's name sounds real familiar, it's because a few years ago, him and Mike Mooneyham, who's based out of the Carolinas, who I'm so trying to get on the show, they wrote a book called Sex, Lies, and Headlocks, which I think you can still find in paperback. So him making those kind of comments was like, wow. And I can testify to people, and yes, I guess Mace would say this is where I name drop, on several occasions working and covering TNA wrestling, be it in Nashville or be it here in Florida, I got to interact with Scott Hall, and I got to interact with him in 2002 when they first started, and then when they did the Kings of Wrestling gimmick in 04. And I always found him to be very approachable, really nice guy, would take pictures with anyone and everyone who walk up to him. And as you said, you know, this isn't like the biggest, like a dirty little secret in the industry. This is a guy who, unfortunately, during his WCW era, they were parading him out there, literally playing a drunk when he was tagging with Kevin Nash and the New World Order. So it's life imitating art, imitating life, imitating art. And he's working for a promotion on and off down here. I believe they're called I Believe in Wrestling, and they're based in Orlando. And I think that's Sean LaFlash, who sometimes listens to us, was the ring announcer for ASW in he's in the piece for like 5 seconds. I'm just going, hey, I know that guy. But were you surprised that Stephanie McMahon-Levesque came out and said he's the person we've spent the most money on in this type of program? Do you think that was just like, you know, why are you saying something like that? It's almost like, are you trying to, you know, pull open your shirt and show the Superman logo going, but look at all the great stuff we've done? Obviously not. He's been to rehab 10 times.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure why she said that. And I really can't even speculate because I don't know her. So I think what it might have been, and this is just, you know, somebody guessing based on nothing, is, you know, I mean, it could be something that they want to let people know their commitment to trying to help the people that once worked for them. I really don't know.
Like Tyson Tomko, those apparently after his fun in St. Augustine is now going into their wellness thing as well. And I wish him nothing but the best because he seems like one of those folks that you go, I don't get it, but oh, hey, it happened. Oh, look at this. Todd Grisham is already apologizing for inappropriate comments at his new ESPN job. Grisham recently referenced the Trail of Tears when discussing Oklahoma's loss to the Sooners. A lot of viewers apparently were offended. Wow. All right. Way to get a start on there, Todd. That came from Jersey Girl. I believe she found that little news note for us. So that's a great way to get your career started. Get thrown under the bus already.
Way to kick things off.
Exactly. If you have visited stores today, be it a Walmart, Best Buy, or online retailers, and saw it on the past 2 days of WWE programming, you know that the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, the rivalry DVD made its way to shelves. Fortunately, through great friends in the industry, I happen to see disc one of this. I know from talking with you, you've seen bits and pieces of it. Did you ever, you know, put yourself back in the shoes that we had where we're sitting somewhere in opposite places in 1997? Did you ever in a million years think, okay, in 2011, these two are going to sit down with Jim Ross and they're going to take you through it step by step, everything that went on?
No, and it's so funny that you say that because that's something that I was thinking as I was watching the DVD. I was actually thinking three things. One, well, actually four. If you think about 1997, one, I wouldn't think that this would be described step by step, you know, happening by happening, you know, 14 years later. Two, I never thought Bret Hart would go back to WWE. Three, after 1998, I never thought that Shawn Michaels would come back to the ring. And four, I have to tell you guys, I didn't think that there would still be this much interest in it. And I think that in a way that's a testament to the careers of Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. But at the same time, I am surprised that people still want to talk about this so much. I mean, if you think about anything, if you go back in wrestling history, almost anything, and you go to the date it happened, and then you say, well, 14 years later, was this still being talked about? There aren't too many things where the answer is yes.
Yeah, I can probably think, you know, like we brought it up with Shane Douglas, something like Larry Zbyszko's chair shots, Bruno Sammartino, you know, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant going into WrestleMania 3 is some great flag points that come up.
Yep.
You know, the ECW crucifixion is another good one there.
The NWO.
The night Goldberg won the belt, or the Austin 316 moment, which I believe is going to get talked about on another DVD in the rivalry series with The Rock in December. But it's probably just because, as the two of them say in the piece, and it's a great doc, it's over 2 hours, that it was a work that turn into a shoot, to turn into a work, to turn into a shoot, and maybe that's why the fans like this so much, is because as they talk about the stuff that happened in WrestleMania 12, Shawn saying, get the F out of my ring, tell him to get F out of my ring, and him backstage, and then you find out the inner story of that thing, maybe that's what it is. It's just the intrigue of the fans are sitting there going, I know, but was it real? Was it a shoot? Was it a work? Was Bret in on it? That kind
right.
of, maybe that's what's fueling this.
Maybe.
Yeah, and it's a three disc, if you do Blu-ray, it's three disc, and I believe the third disc has the Montreal match, which for the longest while, unless you bought, I believe it was WWE Confidential Volume 1, was the only way you could get it unless you went to the torrents, stuff like Spug and Mace did. But yeah, definitely check it out. It looks like it's going to hopefully sell really well. I'm surprised that Michaels being the pay-per-view this past Sunday was in his hometown. I kept joking with the guys on Wrestle Talk Radio, which is on Sundays on Wild Talk Radio Network. I kept saying, Sean's coming out. He's got to come out during this tag match. You know, maybe he comes out. He doesn't wrestle, but maybe he does something. And he never did. And it was just like, okay, San Antonio, cool. I guess we're not going to embarrass Shawn Michaels like we embarrassed Jim Ross whenever we get to Oklahoma.
Yeah, I was, you know, it's funny. I was hoping that he would come out, but in a way, I'm glad that he's actually taken the novel approach and, you know, honored the retirement stipulation and hasn't been on WWE TV too much. So I don't know. I mean, but with that being said, I always like when he comes on. So, you know, I hope that he comes on a, you know, not semi-regular basis, but, you know, every now and then I really hope that he comes on in some way. And, you know, who knows? I mean, they might be doing something with the Kevin Nash Triple H storyline where he comes on. And hey, let me ask you guys something real quick. I wanted to see, did any of your listeners wonder why, when Triple H was mentioning his friends last night in the ring, that he didn't mention Scott Hall's name?
I don't think he mentioned him, and I don't. Did he mention Sean Waltman? Because I know Waltman. He did mention Waltman.
Yeah,
okay.
He did.
Maybe. Yeah, I noticed it. I think Sir Rockin noticed it because we were both social networking at the time, and it could have been just a political thing on their part to go, okay, let's not stir that pot anymore.
Right.
And before we get fully into that, we'll cover the pay-per-view real quick. Just remember, kids, neck bracing is a necessary thing when you're back braced. You'll learn that in paramedic school. Apparently the WWE paramedics did not. Jackie Fice says they always embarrass people in their hometown. That's why the Taker is undefeated, is if they never had it in Death Valley. Oh God. If they ever, well, he won in Texas when he got down there, man. That's where he's really from. Pay-per-view ran like this. Air Boom opened the show. God, that name's just, They defeated, Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, and unfortunately, due to, some wranglings with the office. I'm not sure why, but he immediately had to defend his title against Zack Ryder, but he ends up retaining his championship. Divas champion Beth Phoenix retained her championship because Kelly, Natty Neidhart, banned from ringside, wasn't happy about that, but hey, Sheamus defeats Christian, Miz and R-Truth, defeat CM Punk and Triple H, as Brian kind of teased there, with the help of Kevin Nash, who I swear, I don't know if he's a spy in his other life, that he can cryptically enter these buildings under disguises, and I find it amazing. In a non-title match, which, many folks debated about, Randy won! Give him the belt! And I'm like, it's non-title, kids. They're like, oh, not fair. We had a revisiting, as many people have found out lately. Jerry Lawler actually mentioned it last night on Raw, and I kept going, they're not going to mention Brock and show from SmackDown in Orlando, Florida. But yeah, kids, if you were going, wow, that was original, that was so cool, go to YouTube, find it, go somewhere, find it. Brock Lesnar, Big Show did the exact same thing, but they did it to end the show. Which, before we even get to the actual main event, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, actually, with in regards to TNA Wrestling, how they had, many people speculated they should have flip-flopped their world title match and had Hogan Sting last. Should this have been that way? Flip-flop Del Rio Cena and put this on at the end and end your show with that holy crap, you know, the old Joey Styles, oh my God moment? Or should the show have been mapped the way it is? Del Rio Cena have to now fight in this collapsed ring?
You know, I don't know. I think that the moment itself would have really lent itself well to just kind of that happens and the pay-per-view just goes to black. But it seems that the WWE is very consistent with the WWE Championship being the main event. But you know, I mean, I was surprised when, you know, Cena and Del Rio went on the full match with the ring the way it was.
Yeah, because, as I said, Omega, who's a part of OTL on the show, Network Wednesday nights, and a part of WTR on Sunday nights, we were talking during the show, and we're just going like, okay, this is the end of the show. How the hell are they going to do it? And all of a sudden, here comes everybody out to the ring, Ricardo's in there, and Del Rio's in there, and then Cena actually gets in the ring, and I'm going, what the hell is going on here? And they they legitimately try to have a match in that thing, and I'm going, someone's going to get hurt. And sure enough, Ricardo and Paul met groin, and...
Oh.
All that fun stuff. Were you, as a fan, happy that Del Rio won, even if Ms. Truth get involved there? Because it seems that our listeners that email us at radioandonlineworldofwrestling.com, they're split really 50-50 on Cena should be the champ no matter what. Cena, great. And then there's other people that can't stand Cena, and they're happy with this Del Rio thing. Where does Brian Shields sit on this argument?
I wanted Del Rio to leave San Antonio the champion. I think I'm a fan of longer title reigns. I think that there's a value both to the superstar and the belt when they hold it for a while. And I think it was one of those things, similar, I mean, not identical, obviously, but similar to WrestleMania, where I really felt like The Miz needed to leave WrestleMania with the belt. And I think with Del Rio, you know, this is his second title reign in a relatively brief period of time. And I think in order to be viewed as a credible champion, I think he needed the win. And I think he needs to hold on to the belt. And I might be a little biased because he's one of my favorite villains. I mean, he reminds me, and some of your audience will remember this guy, he reminds me kind of a Gino Hernandez. You know, you know, to me, Alberto Del Rio is like if you took Ric Flair from the mid-80s and Gino Hernandez at his best in world class and put them together with an even smoother performer in the ring. That's what I think he is, and he's been a favorite of mine since he came on the scene, and even the whole thing with his own ring announcer. I mean, that's so obnoxious. I love it.
Now, we asked it last week to Spug when they were in Mexico, and I want to ask you this. Would it have been the ultimate heel move to have had RR do his ring introduction in English in Mexico City? Would that have been totally amazing, or would that have backfired?
You know, when I think about it at first, I think it would have, my initial reaction would have been like, oh, that would have been great because he just would have gotten booed to no end. But then thinking of it like in a bigger picture way, I don't know if it would have been booed to no end, but good for business, or booed to no end and it really backfires. So, you know, that might be one of those things that, you know, they may try a little bit here and there to see, like, you know, kind of like dip their toe in the water to see, you know, how far they can go with that audience. Mm. You know, because, I mean, the WWE has been very successful in Mexico historically, but especially in recent years. And those fans are so passionate. They're really more like the fans in Canada and Japan to me in terms of really respecting the art as well as the athletic form, whereas in the U.S. it's really more viewed as spectacle and something like that where maybe you could have a little bit more fun with them in that way. I don't know.
It's an interesting method to get there. Before we talk about Monday Night Raw, I want to get your thoughts on this as well. The concept of the WWE Network, how long in your knowledge has this idea, was this idea going, even you may have heard it in the lunchroom or over somebody's shoulder when you were doing the book with Kevin Sullivan, or is this just something that's literally come up in the last year or two?
This is something as a concept that I remember hearing about conversationally a long time ago. You know, going back to like, you know, the early to mid 2000s as an idea. And, you know, and WWE, has set, you know, used to allude to that in some of their earnings calls and things like that. So, I mean, I always thought it was a great idea as a fan. Selfishly, I want it to happen, but you know, I mean, it started to make excellent sense, you know, with all of these libraries and with home entertainment being what it is. And I mean, I think they own almost 50% of the home video market in the sports category.
I believe so. I think it's them and UFC maybe up there together.
Something along those lines. So, I mean, I think that it's a great idea. It's been talked about for a while, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, the reason I brought it up is that they've already announced they're going to do like a Big Brother type thing with Legends, and most recently now, apparently the WCW WWE Monday Night Wars is coming back to the WWE Network when the channel launches, and I believe you can go to WWE.com and vote on this, that they're going to have a look back at those shows, and apparently the description says that the whole saga will be unfolded in one season. Holy crap. The five names that they're pitching around are Battleground, Raw versus Nitro, Battleground, the Monday Night Wars, the Monday Night War, WWE Raw versus WCW Nitro, and Monday Night Warfare. So, and whatever floats their boat, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think Kevin Sullivan and I could come up with a better name, but to me, the most important thing as a fan is that the network is happening and it's coming. I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, and that's another thing, you know, I mean, people are always going to talk about the Monday Night Wars. I love talking about it and reading about it and watching any DVD that is on it. And, you know, so I'm all for it.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick time out here because I'll openly admit I have to use the bathroom.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Coming up after the break, we will have Brian Shields with us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. So stay with us.
Website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent. today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Barry. Panic Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site of the pro juice. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hey everyone, this is Sir Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait, Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kinda did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer, I am the host of this.
Oh my god, shut up! Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday nights, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock.
Yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
Hey, you, go, Wild Talk. Wild Talk. You want Wild Talk? This is George the Animal Steel. Hey, you go. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, powered by the Wild Talk Radio Network, UltimateSportsTalk.com, Justin TV, my daughter Abby, who just walked in the door and wanted to come on the air. I'm like, no, past your bedtime. Go down the hall. Spug is here as always. Brian Shields is with us. He is part of a new project that's called Game on Games. You can go and follow game_on_games on Twitter. Did I get that right?
Yep.
Yes!
Sounds
I am
good.
Awesome.
You are.
Yes. We're going to go ahead and get into some Monday Night Raw stuff, because if you thought the pay-per-view was crazy, kids, and this is a I'm prefacing this because we're not going to have time to get into the TNA wrestling stuff, but I joked around on Thursday night, it took TNA wrestling 46 minutes to get a match to the ring. Last night it took TNA, I think, 25 minutes. I don't know,
WWE.
Sir Rockin. Yeah, it took WWE 25 minutes. It was 26. Okay, so you know, this is the old school WCW type thing in the 90s where kids can remember. And as Brian, we just talked with Brian, you'll see it soon on the WWE Network. This whole concept of instead of a match going to the ring first, like I don't know, every pay per view does. We gotta have a promo, and your husband, Triple H, opened this week with one, which led to him basically, well, getting a dose of his own sledgehammer. You've seen this coming the last couple weeks, Spug.
I called it.
Yes, he did, and if you don't believe him, go to the archives of Online World of Wrestling Radio and you can find it.
Screw you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah, I've got a listener from the UK here. Adrian_11UK is here. He said it's over past 3 a.m. over there, so thank you for listening to us live.
Is your last name Street?
Oh, Adrian Street lives here in Florida.
I know. Shut up. Will you play along?
I'm sorry. I don't know how exotic he is, but hey.
All right, we've seen this. Okay.
Go ahead.
As bad as the you're not ready to hold the title yet, and then dropping it to James Storm the next night,
mm-hmm,
was as bad as that was. The way that the WWE has taken this whole storyline is worse in a sense, because we are. I know we're not at the end of October yet, and we have, you know, roughly 25 days or so until Survivor Series. Which, by the way, it's an anniversary year of Survivor Series, and they can't even hold it in the original town that Survivor Series started in.
It's Bridgefield, Ohio, isn't it?
Cleveland.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Bridgefield Coliseum. Bridgefield Coliseum is where the Cavaliers played. You know, it was. It's about a half hour south of Cleveland. But yeah, Cleveland. Started in Ohio. They can't even hold it here. I don't understand why.
Does that building still stand, or would you do it in Quest, no, whatever it's called?
The queue?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the Ridgefield Coliseum hasn't stood since the mid-90s.
Oh, okay.
Summit County tried to make a prison out of it for a while and then tore it down. But yeah. What really aggravates me about the whole thing is, like, you should really have started to see a clear kind of, you know, the storyline should start to play out right now, right? Like, you're not going to get the big reveal that Johnny Ace was the one behind all of it, you know.
On a skateboard?
Yeah. But you, the clues should start to be there, you know what I mean? You should start to get the hints here and there. And WWE hasn't dropped any of them. And I'm losing, like, all sort of interest in this storyline.
Well, maybe, Brian, and this bug also, maybe they're thinking the smart fan already has this idea because they keep showing Johnny Ace minus a skateboard. Hey, WWE kept dropping it in there last night, so I figure, why not me? You know, he's doing the social networking or texting and whatnot. Is this another thing of WWE is still stalling for Mick Foley to do his thing and come in your mind, Brian? Or is this they painted themselves to a corner and now they don't know how to get out?
Yeah, guys, you know, I really don't know. You know, the stuff with Mick Foley, I mean, we've all heard the rumors that he's on his way back to WWE. I mean, I think
it's not a rumor, Brian.
The God of Internet himself, Sir Rockin, said it, so we must believe that it is fact. Because it's Boston Rock, if you can type real fast for me. Is it Boston, the Monday Night Raw before Survivor Series?
Yeah.
I think is him, because he found it first and then released it to the world.
Oh,
he's
wow.
listed in the advertisement.
He's listed in the advertisement also back in August, at the very tail end of August, Foley signed a Legends deal with WWE.
Oh, then that would confirm it.
there you go.
So yeah. There you go, sir.
No, thank you, guys. So there's that. But, you know, the stuff with Mick Foley, I mean, you know, he has a little bit of a history with Triple H, but I just don't think it would really make sense to put him in that mix. Because it seems that they're really playing off of the relationship between Kevin Nash and Triple H. You know, as far as where they're going or have they painted themselves into a corner, I'm just not sure where it's going. So maybe either it's going to get even more involved as the weeks go on or that is the case.
Yeah, as Mace pointed out when we watched Raw together last night, or in his case, morning, we all learned a valuable lesson, and that is if you are back bracing somebody, make sure, what is it you do, kids? Oh yeah, put a neck brace on them so it looks a little more realistic. Unless it got knocked off during the head, the sledgehammer shot. I mean, I was joking on Twitter last night, which is, my name is Wojcik, and I'm doing this for a couple months now during Raw and Impact. And I joked around that Triple H made the comment about, I'm going to go to his house and I may shoot someone. And I'm going, hey, we're dropping in Brian Austin Pillman. Cool. And then we fast forward a little bit and I'm like, oh, cool ambulance thing. Bret Hart Steve Austin. Like, how many other legendary angles are we going to use here, Spug? It's like, whoa, what's going on? I almost wanted him to strap him onto a bike like The Undertaker did to Hogan at one event and drive him around backstage while he's strapped to the gurney.
I'm not going to lie. I watched 45 minutes of Raw last night. That was it.
Oh, so you missed the almost Superman, which we'll talk about in a minute.
I saw that. I saw the very ending. But the majority of I was flipping back and forth, and the majority of my time was spent watching the World Series.
I have nothing wrong with that. A lot of people were watching a 62-7 butt-kicking on national television on Sunday while the pay-per-view was going on, so nothing wrong with that there. It looks like we're going to get a few interesting things going into Survivor Series, because you mentioned the piecing together of this thing with Johnny Laryngitis, or as he's eloquently known in my household as Johnny Laryngitis, which my wife finally got a clue into last night when she walked in on the CM Punk promo going, Jesus, is that guy lost his voice? What the hell is going on there? And I'm like, that's the Johnny Laryngitis guy. She's, oh, possibly I'm not sure if they're going to go back to this traditional 5-on-5 thing, being, as you said, it's the 25th anniversary, if I've got my math right, 24, 25 years.
I think it's 25.
Yeah. I think it's 25.
Okay. Yeah, because it was after WrestleMania 3 and 87 that all this fun started. Would either one of you, I mean, because around this time last year, we were talking, Spug, with Mace, and Jim Barcelona was around for a while at Miami Herald in one of the conversations, and that Vince had thought the Survivor Series is passe, and we're going to bury it, we're going to come up with a new thing, and it may be a War Games thing, or it may be a this thing, or that thing, and hey, guess what, November 20th is still Survivor Series. Would you as a fan, either, I'll pass it to Spug, then to Brian, would you mind seeing traditional 5-on-5 Survivor Series, or maybe even, I don't know if there's enough tag teams, but a tag team Survivor Series thing? Or is that so passe now?
No, 5-on-5. Here's what you do. You ready? You have 5-on-5. And you could do it this year, because I remember the way they used to do it, is they had 4 or 5 matches. I think it was 4 total or 5 total.
Mm-hmm.
But the winners all teamed up, remember?
Yeah, I think Ultimate Warrior did it one year.
And then they had a big match at the end.
Mm.
And then the winners of that were the Ultimate Survivors.
And they got to dance with the gobbledygooker.
They had a trophy, whatever. But this year, with the way it is, you have a few different matches, right? And you can have people from Johnny Ace and people from Triple H. And you could form the 5-on-5 team. You know, you could have a tag team match here and there and whatever. But you end up, you make Team Triple H and you make Team Johnny Ace. And at the end of the pay-per-view, guess what? Those two teams go at it for control of the WWE.
Like we did 10 years ago with WCW, the Alliance and everything, which was a lot of fun back then. Do you agree or disagree, Brian, that especially for the 25th anniversary, there should be the traditional 5-on-5 Survivor Series?
I couldn't agree more. Survivor Series behind WrestleMania was my favorite pay-per-view as a kid. I always loved the idea of teams of my favorite superstars, and I've always loved elimination matches. So anytime there's a Survivor Series, obviously it's every year, I want to see teams of five strive to survive, as they used to say. You know, and I remember even back in the day, guys, I think it was the first 2 Survivor Series. One of the matches were with all of the good guy tag teams,
mm-hmm.
all of the bad guy tag teams. Now, sadly, you know, we don't have the number of teams to really have that. But, you know, I mean, I think you got to do it, you know, 5-on-5 elimination.
Well, that leads to the great question, because we heard on Monday Night Raw at the end of the main event, where Cena won via DQ after Truth hit him a water bottle, of all things. I kept saying, is Conan around? Has he got a shoe lined up next? I mean, God. We've all know it. If you're a friend of Dwayne The Rock Johnson on Facebook or The Rock on Twitter. You know, a few weeks ago, he leaked the poster for Survivor Series. WWE, I believe it was September 16th, and Sorokin was actually the one that pointed it out to me last night when we were watching the show together, said, I believe it was, they announced The Rock will make his return, and at that point, it was a traditional five-on-five thing. Now, I know the great phrase, card subject to change without notice. Did this take away any of the luster of last night in the ring with Cena doing that? Because he got a Road Warrior style pop out of this thing. So, I mean, does he show up next week with the Muppets being here, or do we save him and he drags Cena along until that event in Boston that Mick Foley's going to be at? If either one of you are running this.
Yeah, well, I was actually hoping that there would be one more week of what happened last night, just to draw it out a little bit. I mean, I know for timing, you know, we don't have that many Raws left till Survivor Series. I was just hoping there'd be, you know, there'd be one more week of it. So that was really my, you know, kind of my big thing.
Well, you said you watched 45 total minutes of it, but did you get that vibe that Brian is pitching, that this maybe was too fast, too soon? Let Cena think about it, about who could I get?
I would have liked to have seen Cena had to go on a quest. You know what I mean? Cena has to go on the hunt for The Rock. I would have much, much rather seen that than seen what happened last night.
Sorokin has dropped. Let me jump in real quick here. Sorokin is saying that WWE aired an advertisement during tonight's NXT taping in Houston, Texas, that apparently asking whether The Rock will accept Cena's offer to join forces at the Survivor Series. So we may actually have a video of Dwayne Johnson. So I'm not sure if he's still filming G.I. Joe 2 or Fast and the Furious 6 or Tooth Fairy 2 or something. So, but go ahead, Brian.
No, I just, like, you know, I was thinking back, it was always so great. I mean, you know, in wrestling history, when that person needed to ask an adversary to be their partner, or even like the build up years ago to, you know, when Shawn Michaels, you know, asked Hogan to be his tag partner. I mean, I felt like that wasn't immediate. You know, like there was a little bit of a ride that you were taken on, where you were like, oh, well, you know, who's going to be his partner and will the guy accept? And I mean, you know, like I thought it was cool Monday night. I just would have liked to have seen it, you know, maybe one more week of not knowing.
Yeah. You brought it up, and I'm remembering, and this, it ages me to the era of primetime wrestling on USA Network, where I believe it was Survivor Series 92, the night that Brett and Shawn had their non-title versus title thing, and they did the tag match, which was Ric Flair and Razor Ramon versus Randy Savage, basically on one episode of Primetime Wrestling, had a coax Perfect into accepting his challenge, and Bobby Heenan sitting across the desk from him and eventually smacking him, and all of a sudden it's there, and I'm like, okay, this works, but I don't know. Sorokin was saying that apparently the rumors around the campfire is that Vince McMahon and creative want to just make this a two-on-two match. Is this the match that closes your show, or does one of the world titles have to close your show?
No, you can close your show without it. You can close your show without a world title, without the world title.
Okay.
I think if it's for the fate of your company, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Storyline-wise, I would definitely say that has to close out the show.
Yeah, because if you go the traditional Survivor Series route, you can see like a Randy Orton, Sheamus, and add a couple more people versus Christian, Cody Rhodes, and add a couple more people, and you could see maybe something. There's enough divas here that you could actually let them have some TV time. Somebody makes a debut or re-debut and comes in and kills everybody in the garden. Who knows? I just want to bring up this other point of you know, I asked Brian before you came back, Spug, the whole Cena is, you know, he's 50-50 with the audience. I know we're a few weeks away from it, but forecast this. Do we see, and the Garden's infamous for this, Brian can testify to it as a fan, of them cheering the daylights out of Rocky, and when he tags out, they boo the crap out of Cena, and they may have to do an improv here, that they may have this split on a team. I mean, these are two, The Rock hasn't been in the ring in 7 years, but he's still got the greatest instincts in the world in the ring. Does WWE worry about something like that this far out, or do they just go, eh, they're pros, they'll finish it in the ring?
He's with The Rock. Of course he's going to be the heel. Well, I mean, you're going to have to heel. You're going to have to heel turn him at some point. You're going to have to.
Do you think it's time for Cena to go heel, Brian? Or do you think we got to sell enough t-shirts still?
Well, I mean, I think from a business standpoint, and when I say business standpoint, I mean John Cena merchandise. You know, I mean, listen, you can never sell enough. I mean, I think last year he sold over $100 million in merchandise alone himself. But, you know, and I think just with the whole Garden thing and the booing, I mean, you know, I feel like WWE, they know that that's going to happen, and they just deal with it. And the way that they deal with it is they just say, like, you know, he gets a reaction one way or the other. I think for turning him to, you know, villainous ways, if you will, you know, I don't know if they're going to do it. Is it time or not? I think it's a coin toss. I think if he does it, I think within the next, I would say within the next year would be the time.
Hmm.
Because here's the thing, guys. There's a part of me that feels like, oh, he should do it now. And then there's another part of me that feels like, well, he's still doing very well business-wise as is. Like the reason why it worked with Hogan was because by the time Hogan was down in WCW, he was getting booed in the buildings. But he had to do something totally different, and that was the NWO. So with Cena, for this to be a successful turn, it would have to be something like that total opposite. I mean, what do you got? Do you agree?
I could see that happening, absolutely.
I think Cena has to turn heel. Has to. Because inevitably, like, you look at what happened with Hogan. I mean, you get to a point where it's so stale as a babyface that the only thing you can do is turn heel.
The shelf life thing that we've talked about before, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and honestly, someone took his superpowers away. He lost those jean shorts. He hasn't come back.
Yeah, and if you follow up me and Mace and Spug and Rock on Twitter, we were kidding around about that during the pay-per-view about, you know, I see sheet music being passed out. I'm like, look, they all have capes on. If you've never listened to this show and you just joined us to listen to the franchise Shane Douglas, thanks for doing it, but we kid about the Superman mentality around the John Cena character. Omega is infamous for it on WrestleTalk Radio, but I did it last night too. I was going like, hey, I have this sheet music here from last night. And as soon as Zack Ryder got his ass kicked, I'm sitting there typing a Rock going, oh man, he's going to win and beat Miz and Truth. And all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute. Cena actually got a beat down on Monday Night Raw. Granted, he stood up in the middle of the ring at the end of it, no sold it, calling for The Rock to help him, but hey, he's kind of getting the hint. But he's got pay-per-views between now and then to do it. I mean, you're doing it. You've got Survivor Series, then you've got TLC on December 18th. The Rumble is January 22nd, announced to be at Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. And then you've got Elimination Chamber, which I believe is February 19th, in XL Center in Hartford. And then, of course, Mania is in Miami April 1st. How soon do you get this ball rolling? Do you do it in Survivor Series, especially in the largest media market, or do you tease it between every so often? Because Jersey Girl pointed it out, if you go to Rock's IMDb page, he's still filming G.I. Joe, and I don't know how long G.I. Joe 2's got to wrap here. So gauge it for me, Brian, and then Spug. How soon do you do this?
How soon do you turn him heel?
Yeah, how soon? Does it happen? Does it have to happen at Survivor Series, or can it happen every? It could slowly happen on a Raw, but maybe Johnny Ace gets in his ear, or someone else gets in his ear.
No, it doesn't have to happen until the Royal Rumble.
Okay.
You don't have to do it to the Royal Rumble. And I know how you do it. The way you do, because you already know they're going to wrestle at Mania, right?
Exactly.
And this is what bugs me, is they announced it the night after Mania last year, is that they could have waited until the Royal Rumble this year. Because if The Rock's coming back, you know, to do this Survivor Series bit, you have him do the Survivor Series bit, then you have him be an entrant in the Royal Rumble. Surprise entrant. He throws Cena out. And then from there, it's on.
Yeah, and don't forget, kids, WrestleMania tickets do go on sale this Saturday, I believe it is.
Mania's in Miami this year, right?
Miami, which probably means Dwayne's going into the HOF, and I believe we outlined last week, the rumor is that Alberto Rio's uncle, the legend of Mil Máscaras, is going in as well.
Is it sad that I don't think of The Rock as a Hall of Famer?
Overall, or just not yet, that he should go in?
Overall.
Ooh.
And I'm not even trying to be controversial. I'm being dead serious.
Okay, please explain why, then. I'd love to know this answer.
We've had plenty of individuals, you know, who've come through the wrestling ranks, who could work a microphone and talk. You know, Rock had a couple of the traits that you needed, you know, to be a top guy. He had the ability to talk, and he had the ability to sell himself, and therefore people wanted to see him. But when you put him in the ring, I don't think he was that great of a wrestler. I don't. And you can be a legend and not be a Hall of Famer. I mean, if you look at guys in the Hall of Fame, legitimately, you have Blackjacks and the Briscoes and Pat Patterson and Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, Ric Flair. Ric Flair is the gold standard. If you look at, you know, put personal Ric Flair aside and just look at him professionally, as far as in the world of professional wrestling, he was what they would call a five-tool player in baseball. He had it all. And I think Rock had some of it, but he didn't have all of it. And he is a legend, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
Agree or disagree, Brian? Did I lose, Brian?
No.
Do you agree with what Spug's saying here?
I disagree, and here's why. Because it ultimately is about bringing people in the arenas. You bring up great points, and I think they're all valid. But I think if you went by that, then you could make the argument to a degree, you know, that Hulk Hogan wouldn't be in there either, because he was not he did not have an amateur wrestling background, and, you know, and a lot of people feel that, you know, outside of Japan, you know, his matches were,
were very predictable and very basic.
Hogan's in there because he's the first.
The original Five Moves of Doom?
No, Hogan's in there because he's the first. Look, I understand that. I understand that before Hogan, I mean, you had wrestling, you had the Dusty Rhodes and the Harley Races, and in its territorial days, you had popular stars in various territories. Hogan was the first in the sense that when the people specifically came to see him. Him and Vince revolutionized professional wrestling. That is why Hogan is in. Rock didn't have to revolutionize anything. The path was already laid out before him. The template was there.
I can totally understand both arguments.
I really think that's a great point that the template was there, but it had to be that mold had to be broken, otherwise you wouldn't have had the Attitude Era. The one point that I have heard people say is that they don't feel that The Rock had a long enough career to be a Hall of Famer, and that's something that I feel you could say, but I ultimately feel that he is a Hall of Famer.
He'll get in, but here's the thing. Here's my thing. Rock didn't break any molds. Rock at the Attitude Era was well in effect long before The Rock. Long before the Die Rocky Die chance and him coming out in that shirt on Monday Night Raw and, you know, and turning heel. Those wheels were set in motion with the Montreal Screwjob and Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin before that at WrestleMania when Austin wouldn't tap out and bled all over the mat. You know, the wheels for the Attitude Era were set in motion long before The Rock was ever The Rock. And if Rock broke one mold, it was the theory that you couldn't be successful anywhere else but wrestling.
It's a valid point on either end, and we could debate this one till we're blue in the face, and we will as we get closer, because we may be doing the WrestleMania Memories tour as we did last year, so we may We'll work the emails. I already have the next couple weeks lined up.
I better get George Steele back.
You never know who our email list can attract. As mentioned, if you were here for the franchise Shane Douglas and you're listening to us for the first time, thanks for doing it. If you're a regular, thanks for doing it again. Each and every Tuesday night, 9 Eastern, you can download us at OWWRadio.com, WildTalkRadio.com, iTunes, Click Wrestle, which is the official on-demand site for All I World of Wrestling. Wednesday nights on this very network, 9 p.m. Eastern, is We Talk Live, and I'm sure we could get Brian over there at some point since he is a gamer. He may enjoy that as well.
Absolutely.
We may even try for Stevie Richards. If you didn't listen to last week, we talked more gaming stuff with Stevie than anything else. Did what Stevie tell you work on your iPhone?
Yeah, it did. It worked really well. The only notifications that I still have on are for calls and for text messages when I'm like listening to something. But other than that, yeah, it worked fine.
Excellent.
Battery life has improved tenfold, and the unfortunate thing, though, is that it isn't the early days of Wi-Fi where nobody had a password on it. Now everybody's got a password on their Wi-Fi, so I can't connect to anything unless I'm at McDonald's or my house.
Ouch. Saturday nights on this very network is the one and only CB Radio.
Here's a pay-per-view this Saturday.
Oh, that's right. UFC with the main event that changed. Is it BJ Penn that's now the main?
BJ Penn versus Nick Diaz is the main. Originally, it was the main event, and then St. Pierre versus Condit was signed for that same event, and then St. Pierre got hurt, and now St. Pierre's out, so it's gonna be Penn versus Diaz again as the main event. Go Nick Diaz, because I hate BJ Penn.
Yep. After that attraction, we may or may not do From Tapouts to Knockouts. It's up to Mace and to Spug. CB Radio. Yep, CB Radio is on this very network.
Yes, it is.
The Godfather of Extreme, Rob Parks, and our friend Subway and Sir Rockin. Tell everybody what happened last week so they will go and download this archive.
Family Feud, bloopers we took a look at, strange tweets, and this is how dumb drug dealers are. You hand out flyers everywhere saying heroin for sale, right? Then you put your name on it and your address.
Now, I'm a pastor's wife, so I'm going to say sperm.
So, yeah. Anyway, check that out. This Saturday night's a Halloween show. Check that out. Midnight-ish. CB Radio.
Is this the 200th episode this week?
November 5th is the 200th episode of CB Radio. Huh. Check out all archives, cbradio.ewazone.com.
Sunday night, 10 o'clock, because there is no pay-per-view.
Yes, 10 o'clock, Wrestle Talk Radio, with Omega. And
that's about it.
That's about it. Who knows? Who knows shows up? It's Tim Stein, Omega, Spug, and you never know who else will show up on WTR Sunday night. This Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, Alan Wojcik.
Yes, absolutely. And as I said, if you enjoyed this program tonight, next week, 9 o'clock Eastern, or the first hour, if you're listening to us in an archive and you're going, why is he telling us the time? Well, people listen live. They don't listen on the go like some folks do. Our last guest from the Crossfire wrestling event that's going to be November 5th, she worked for TNA. She'll be up kicking Rick Cataldo's ass at WSU Breaking Barriers 2. The one and only Becky Bayless will be here. And also on the second hour, as it's mapped out right now because of his availability, he's going to be going to be a part of the debut of its Canadian All-Pro Wrestling. Is that the name of the promotion that Tim has set up?
Yeah, it's called Canadian All-Pro Wrestling, yes. Good segue out. Good to you.
Pimp him the website.
No, we're going to have, we're having Hotshot Johnny Devine right
here. Hotshot Johnny Devine is going to be back here, and we won't have anybody interrupting him and telling him to shut up my show and other crap like that.
He will be appearing on the first ever Canadian All Pro Wrestling event, Onslaught, on November 5th. And you can get tickets now for that event and Remembrance on November 10th. Tickets can be ordered over the phone at 403-774-8629 or go to CanadianAllPro.com.
Now I'm going to have to tell Johnny to shut up because this is my show.
I also want to let everybody know on the 8th and the 15th, we are working on getting back on this network some of the stars of Women Superstars Uncensored. I can say that we've been in talks with Mercedes Martinez, the world champ, the spirit champ, Jessica Havoc. The whole Midwest Militia, which is Jessica, Allison Kay, and Sassy Stephanie.
I missed a good time Sunday.
Mm.
Because I didn't go to training Sunday.
Uh-oh.
Because the wife was sick. So I stayed at home. I took her to the hospital Sunday morning. We thought she had really bad pneumonia and ended up she had really bad allergies. And, apparently Jessica Havoc came in, was a guest trainer on Sunday. I'm kind of sad I missed that.
Oh, you will get kicked in the face at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to get it.
Yeah, also possibly in the mix, the one and only Alicia, who's a big fave of ours, and possibly Brittany Savage, who's a former spirit champion as well. And if you love what you hear on this network, this show and WrestleTalk Radio. Is it Wrestling? What the heck's that website that I just went to today? WrestlingRadioAwards.com?
Yes, Wrestling Radio Awards. Vote now for your favorite interviews from the show and WrestleTalk Radio, like our Shawn Michaels one or our BG James interview or
Jay Lethal.
There's a whole list. Go to owradio.com for the whole list of our guests on this program. It's WrestlingRadioAwards.com.
We better be nominated for that Havoc Award, for the Havoc interview.
Yes, Jessica Havoc, too. So, go there.
Yep, I already nominated her. So, as mentioned, thanks to the franchise Shane Douglas, who has a Facebook fan page. He has a Twitter account, but I don't believe he's ever used the thing. Thanks to Brian Shields for being here. Don't forget it's at GameOn_Games. You can also follow Brian at MightyPen_Sword. Spug is Kilted_Wiseman. You can do at Wild Talk Radio. You can do at OWW Genesis Forum, which is the official forum of Wild Talk Radio Network and OWW Radio. Unfortunately, my name is Wojcik. Thanks for being here each and every Tuesday night. Have a good night.